everybody. Welcome to a Wednesday edition Bulldog Hour. Kevin Russ alongside here as always until 3. CG will join me around 2:30. A little email work in transition before he comes up, and he will bring you to 6 o'clock tonight. Giants and the Braves play the third of four. The Giants last night, I don't know what to make of the Giants because they are 5 games under 500, and I guess you can say they're destined to be an under 500 club for the year, and that's probably accurate. If you are a glass half full guy or a glass cup runneth over guy, you look at what happened at the end of the series in Arizona over the weekend where the Giants came back to win a game that they had no business winning, and then last night the same thing happens. They were dead in the water, down 3-1 in the ninth, came back to win on a panic base hit. Pilar had a timely hit, Sandoval as well, and the Giants somehow managed to win. So that's the good news. The bad news is they're still 10 games out of first place. The other thing I wanted to mention, the A's wrapping up already today in Cleveland, and I said this the other day, that the A's, I think, will still make the playoffs when it's all said and done. Last year, of course, they played the wild card against the Yanks. The A's got back to 500 today with the win, so while nobody's looking, it's still a pretty good team in Oakland. When I say nobody, nobody nationally is looking, nobody in Oakland is looking. I think only Billy Beane and company are pleased about what the A's are doing, he and Bob Melvin. Anyhow, we'll see how it goes for them. For us, baseball-wise, just the Giants tonight, of course, and then we get started with the Bulldogs tomorrow as they play the 6:30 game in Reno against Nevada. So it's the 1-4 seeds. Prior to that, at 2 o'clock, you will have San Diego State and UNLV, the 2-3 seed game. Mountain West Network for video for everything, and for us, of course, all Bulldog games on 940, and Paul will have the pre tomorrow at 6 o'clock. And we will not have any more hockey. That's the other thing that is very depressing after, never mind the Giants season, after the Sharks showed such promise. Lost home ice, got it back, and then lost it again and lost the whole thing to the Blues. So we go back to 1970, the Blues and the Bruins will go ahead and drop the puck for the Stanley Cup playoffs, and here's a tip. None of us care out here on the West Coast. Same way the East doesn't care about us. All right, guys, that having been said, today, prior to the email transition, we bring up our good friend Jackson Moore, barkboard.com. Get caught up on Fresno State. Jackson, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Tony. How are you?
I'm doing just nifty, Jackson. I've got about a week and a half till the Warriors start, so no more angst until we get the 30th of the month. So it's smooth sailing from here till a week from tomorrow. All right, listen, as we get started, I want to mention I brought up barkboard.com. You have a one-day sale coming up, correct?
Yeah, that's going to be tomorrow, so don't miss out on it. You know, we like to do these one-time sales where we get new users in. You get in for a really great deal the first time around, and hopefully we earn your business when it comes time to renew. So tomorrow we're really going all out. We're doing 80% off for your first year if you decide to join as an annual member. That comes out to less than $2 a month, and so hopefully if you thought about it and haven't done it yet, or you haven't been a subscriber for quite some time, then maybe you'll look into that, and that'll be for tomorrow only, and that's for new members as a one-time deal.
Well, that's a great deal when you're looking at that price for the year for the premium part of the board, the insider part of the board. It's well worth it. Well worth it any time of the year, but in particular with football season coming up around the bend here in the next couple of months, as we get to the very aptly named fall camp. I'll tell you what, the players probably wish August was like this, Jackson. I mean, they'd be okay with that, right? I didn't know we all moved to Seattle. My sister and brother-in-law moving to Seattle, I didn't realize they brought me along, because that's exactly what it's like here. Every day you wake up and it's raining, which is not exactly what May is supposed to be in this town. But I will guarantee you this, my friend, when we get to fall camp in August or voluntary workouts coming up in the next month, it's not going to be like this. You can mark that down. Or if you think you're going to get 70 degrees, overcast, and a little bit of rain, and the sun will break through the clouds once in a while, if you think that's August in this town, you clearly have not been in this town. I'll go back again one more time to the greatest quote ever about Fresno, and that was Bill Vukovich Sr., the legendary IndyCar driver. Indy, of course, coming up this 103rd running coming up this weekend, but Bill Vukovich, who should have won the race 4 times in a row, won twice in a row, had mechanical problem the other, and then was tragically killed in an accident that was not his fault leading the race, the final race, of course, that he ever ran But when he won the 1 year, I think it was 53, when they had the hottest temperatures ever at Indy, everybody else was tapping out. They couldn't go 500 miles. He goes 500 miles, no problem, pulls into victory lane, and the pit reporter says, "Bill, you look like you could have got another 500, and I told you, Jackson." His answer was, "Have you ever ridden a tractor in Fresno in July?" That was his response to the people at Indy. And I would say, this you better cherish, even though for some of the farmers right now, they're a little worried about the, you know, the cherries, everything else. But I'll tell you what, this is something we're not going to see in a couple of months. Otherwise, global warming has really changed everything to global cooling for us right now. All right, that's your weather report for today, Jackson. Let's get to more pertinent topics, and I hope people do jump on the offer for barkboard.com. It's a great chance for the year. I want to ask you about San Jose State, because I try to hide the fact that you published that board as well. As you know, I rarely, if ever, bring it up, except every time you're on the air. I've asked you this question before. Are they in trouble in regard to D1 status up there?
I don't think so, Tony, but this, what's been going on these last couple of weeks has been alarming. You already have the fact that they've really struggled with football, and both men's and women's basketball at this point. They're really not contributing to the conference in any of those three sports in recent years. And now you have an issue where some of the money that's supposed to be distributed towards scholarships is being questioned. Upwards of $6 million that may not have been handled correctly. There's, you know, two sides to the story and everything, but there's a lot of concern about that report. At the same time, you have a bunch of their student athletes that are voicing concern about just their where they stand in the program, how they're being treated. They had 19 pages, I guess, worth of grievances filed to the athletic director today. And, you know, and this is kind of a bad year, a bad time of year for all that to come down when you don't have, you know, the major sports kind of hiding some of these things. It's basically the only topic at San Jose State right now as far as sports goes. And it's a tough situation. And, you know, you have track, which they tried to bring back, and now the track that has been historic there at San Jose State is supposed to turn into a parking lot. So there's a whole lot of kind of smaller issues at hand right now. And I imagine they'll kind of wade through, make any necessary adjustments, and get back to football here in a few months. But right now, it's not looking very good with what's going on over there.
No, you're right. And, boy, I tell you, the history of Lee Evans and those guys, and even Tommy Smith and John Carlos and guys that ran there during the heyday of the 60s and track and field and everything we saw throughout this valley, it's hard to take that storied kind of program is such an afterthought. And Jackson, I'm not going to pound on this because I realize that there are other issues in San Jose. We've talked about the Silicon Valley seeing so much of the major tech companies. Oakland knows how it feels, right? The Warriors say, "Nice knowing you, we're going to San Francisco." The tech companies have done the same thing. They have gone to the high-end part of San Francisco, which is all of San Francisco, I might add. But for San Jose itself as a community, I've said this to you before, objectively speaking, if you were to even rank the most popular sport at San Jose State, which without question is football, Jackson, I think it's probably eighth at best in the hierarchy of the sporting life in the Bay Area. Is there any way to ever overcome that? Because even if you're playing well, you're still probably eighth, if you want to be optimistic about it.
Yeah, I don't think there is, but I don't necessarily think that should be the goal there either. I mean, they've got about a 30,000-seat stadium, and if they could put just 20 or so in there, it would be a big upgrade to what's been going on lately. You know, if things are going really well and they can get close to selling it out, I mean, they still may be pretty low in the pecking order relatively there, but it would still be a big upgrade, and it's something that is feasible. We saw it even with Mike McIntyre, which was kind of a short spurt that Fresno State didn't quite see. It was when the Bulldogs went to the Mountain West and San Jose State was still in the whack for just a short time, but they did put up some pretty good seasons, and they did fill up the stands quite a bit for that short span, and it went downhill pretty quickly with the last couple coaches. But I think, you know, the goal is, I don't think there should be to be the number one event in San Jose the way that Fresno State is the number one deal in the Valley. But they can still survive without having that kind of notoriety around the program, too.
I think you're correct, but it does take a fan base, a core fan base to support you. And without question, it's the how to lie with statistics a little bit. Potential eyeballs in the Bay Area, they trumpet that all the time. But potential eyeballs don't mean anything if in reality most people don't care. So you can say in theory they're up in the fourth biggest media market in the United States. You can also say within the confines of that media market, nobody gives a damn. And that's just the cold, hard truth. And I hate to put that the big damper on your board there, Jackson. But you know what? The sale's good for Fresno. When you and I do this gig up in the Bay Area next week, we'll completely reverse things. You know that. All right. Speaking of Fresno State, Coach's Caravan, well-received in Visalia last night at Elbow Room. Any revelations coming our way from the coaches' meetings?
Yeah, you know, they like to keep the atmosphere kind of in a situation where the coaches can feel free to say some things without them kind of leaking out. But it does sound like there's some movement with Josh Hokett where perhaps he may take a redshirt this year, focus on wrestling, come back as a linebacker right. The next year. I mean, that hasn't been confirmed, but that's kind of been one of the things that was said that was just too great of a report to not hold back for some people, it looks like.
Yeah, that's something we've asked Josh about, and it's kind of been intimated that maybe he would use the year and wouldn't have to play that game of weight loss, weight gain, and weight loss and all the stuff that very much goes on, particularly in December when he has to try to find a way to get the weight off that he spent the summer putting on to play football. So we'll see what happens. Also, was Teddy solidly in Reyna's corner or not so much? What is the truth about this? Because I've heard that maybe Jeff made it clear, hey, you know what, it's Jorge's job, but this isn't exactly Marcus McMarion's senior season. I mean, it's fair to look at it that way. Was that the intimation?
Well, I think the message that even before Reyna was named the starter that they've really been getting out there is that Reyna is a little bit of a gunslinger, and they'll let it fly, and they can't afford to have interceptions because of that and turnovers. And that was something that Marcus McMarion, while they didn't get overly aggressive and go for the home run play all the time, and he only threw, what, four picks last year, and two of those, I believe, in the bowl game, if I've got all that right. So, I mean, they were so efficient with the ball. They didn't turn it over. They didn't hurt themselves. And especially with Fresno State going at USC, going to host Minnesota the following week, those are two games that are winnable, but they're going to be tough. And if Fresno State goes out there and a few interceptions are thrown right off the bat or some turnovers happen early on, it's going to be tough to recover from.
Yeah, we've talked about it, Jackson. You're so right. I mean, no coach likes turnovers, but Tedford has a particular acute aversion to them, right? And so he wants his quarterback to make the proper decisions. And that comes from being a quarterback himself, that he was an outstanding QB. He was not a guy that just decided to turn around like Brett Favre and put it up for grabs all the time. It was something we talked about in regard to Derek Carr's time here early on, that he had to kind of wean himself off of that Favre mentality. And I know that's something that Tedford doesn't appreciate. So as long as Reyna's careful, I'm sure he'll be fine. But obviously Tedford reserves the right to make sure that it works the way it's supposed to. Also, did Teddy say anything? Was he upset that his buddy Aaron Rodgers was laying waste to the Game of Thrones people? Anything said at all about Aaron's very long, pointed critique, even though he was an extra in the thing, for goodness sake?
Yeah, not to my knowledge. I know he was on the show for a couple of seconds, and I think he got blown up or something. But then he came back with all that critiquing.
He's not done yet. I think Aaron's still going. And you know, here's the thing about Aaron Rodgers, and Teddy can tell you this. He can tell you two things. One, don't let Marshawn Lynch drive the Cushman cart. We've talked about this before. And two, don't ask Aaron Rodgers a question if you don't really want an expansive answer, okay? Because you're going to get one from a very talented, very opinionated, highly intelligent guy, who incidentally is part owner of the Milwaukee Bucks, which I consider to be an act of a traitor, because he clearly is a Bay Area, Northern California guy, and he shouldn't be pulling against the Warriors. Although, I'll tell you this, Tom Brady said he's still a Warrior fan. They were season ticket holders when he was a kid. But Julian Edelman said, even though he grew up there, the minute the Warriors got Durant, they stacked the deck in an unfair way, therefore he no longer pulls for the team. Now, Jackson, I got to ask you, when you're playing for the Patriots, how in the world could you ever say you don't like the fact someone is stacking the deck in their favor, huh? Isn't there a bit of hypocrisy somewhere in there? Unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough one to call. I mean, the Warriors have pretty much made it what it feels like unfair, and even with Durant, it seems like they're not stopping anytime soon. And as a Grizzlies follower, it's not something I'm too fond of watching.
But in fairness for you, you started when they were in Vancouver. I should mention that to people. But Kimmel the other night actually said, hey, the Warriors want to get in for the fifth time in a row. They're going to go to the finals. I guess their theory of taking all the best players and putting them on one team has worked out. Okay, again, an unfair shot. I didn't see Alphonso McKinney and Jordan Bell and those guys on the list of the greatest players in Jonas Derebko. So I'm tired of people taking unfair shots at the Warriors. They're, as I've said before, the little train that could. They're a bunch of overachievers, and they're gritty and tough and under-talented, and that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. All right, I want to ask you about baseball here. We're going to, of course, look very closely at what happens beginning tomorrow. First of all, what are you going to do? Are you going to post it all during the stuff in Reno? What are you going to do?
Yeah, I won't be able to make it out to Reno myself, but I will be keeping track of it and posting some updates on the boards. And as we're at a point now where a lot of people are starting to catch on to what the baseball team has been doing. You know, it's been a few years since there's been this kind of excitement, and through this big run over the last 24 games, some of the posters have started to come back to the Biden Field message board we have there. And so there's a little more reason to be posting and following the tournament, and we'll be sure to keep those updates coming and have some stories out as the Bulldogs progress through the double elimination setup.
Well, you're certainly right about more people starting to pay attention, and as we've talked over and over again, it's been since 2012 the team was even in a regional, so it's the longest drought we've seen in a long, long time in this program. But, Jackson, in fairness to you, you're someone who has continued to follow the team, so I will ask you, the optimism, which is understandable because this team has played great ball. I mean, they scored 34 runs and gave up 9 over the weekend at UNLV. The teams that are in the tournament, the other three, the Bulldogs, in this month of May, have beaten those three clubs 8-9. But do you legitimately think this team can, A, get through the Mountain West tournament, A-plus get through a regional, and somehow make a big move that we have not seen since 2008?
I think they're in position too. They do have to go to Reno, and they start off against Nevada, so that's a little bit of a disadvantage for them. But you look at the competition that they're going up against in that four-team tournament, and they pretty much handled their own against all of them. I mean, the only series I believe they lost out of that group was UNLV, and that was the very first series of Mountain West play, and the Bulldogs are looking like a much different team, totally different right now than they did back then. I mean, the Bulldogs are playing as good as they have been, and while baseball is a little more random, I feel like, than, say, basketball, it is a double elimination format. So, you know, if they can win the first game, I think they'll put themselves in really good position to, if they have a slip-up, they can kind of bounce back and come away with that automatic bid.
As we've mentioned over and over again, the way these tournaments are set up, they are the exact mimicking of the regional, the four-teamer that you would see the following week. More than likely, the Bulldogs get through this. It'll be in L.A. in the UCLA regional. Those are the number one Bruins in the country, by the way. Nice draw there, right? Although Fresno State figures to be a 2 or 3 seed, so they wouldn't see the Bruins in the first game. But you can win this tournament in as few as 3 games. As you know, you can lose it in as many as 5, and I guess the goal is pretty basic. Get something from, I would assume, Jensen tomorrow and then more on Friday. And Jackson, if you're 2-0 going to Saturday, I think you have to have a pretty good feeling, because 2 years ago, or 2016, you ended up 0-2. Can the Bulldogs get there, in your opinion, if they don't win the tournament? What's your feeling about the at-large?
Well, I feel like they have the resume, and I feel like they should get some extra points here for the way that they're finishing the season. If this big run that happened at the beginning of the year, you know, you flipped it around, then I think that would be justified to hurt them a little bit in the consideration. But the way that they're finishing the season, they won the conference regular season, I think that they really deserve the shot. Now, when it comes down to the selection time, I never have a whole lot of faith in the NCAA to give that spot to the Mountain West team. So I think it's going to be a little bit of a waiting game to see if it happens or not. But I think they should be in there for sure. And I think that they have a good combination of both at the plate and on the pitching mound. They're a pretty well-balanced team, and they're getting it done on both ends right now. I think they deserve a shot, and they can probably make some noise in a regional in my mind.
Well, again, you get started for the Bulldogs tomorrow, weather permitting. I know it's going to be windy and cold and probably a little rainy, but that's Reno at any time of year. But this time of year, we're looking at it this particular calendar year almost for sure. It'll be 6:30, the first pitch, the first game, San Diego State and UNLV, the 2-3 game, starts at 2, and then we'll have our pregame at 6 o'clock with Paul. All the games for the Bulldogs, radio-wise, with Paul on 940 here, and also Mountain West Network for video. All right, Jackson, last thing, you brought up basketball. Anything new in basketball land as we head to a little bit of a dead period for all Fresno State sports in the start of summer, and then we'll get back to everything. Anything new at all going on with Hutt and company, other than the fact that congratulations to Hutt, who is newly married, so I know that for he and his wife, they are busy with she coaching San Diego State's women's team and he, but it's nice to know that they were able to spend time together right now, because I know that's a real battle for him during the season. Anything going on basketball-wise beyond Hutt's marriage?
Yeah, it looks like Hutt's still recruiting. There may be a preferred walk-on in the works. It looks like that's the latest development. It looks like he may try to bring in maybe one more guy if they can squeeze in a spot. But about a month or so, we should see this incoming recruiting class start to make their way, report in June, and get some more time with the program compared to last season, which was kind of a hectic situation with guys coming in a lot later.
And then as I let you go, as far as you know, everybody who's supposed to be eligible is going to be ready to go in the fall?
Yeah, to my knowledge, that's the case. It sounds like it's been a lot smoother process than last year. As, you know, even Hassan Juf, we didn't know until about the season started whether or not he was going to be eligible or not, and it turned out against his favor. So he'll be back and ready to go. The transfers will be ready, it looks like, and they should be just about at full strength. They just have the one point guard transfer from Oregon State who will be a mid-year guy, but other than that, they should be a full force ready to go for the season.
I look forward to it. Ought to be a great football, basketball year coming up, and hopefully this start of 2019 in the calendar year will be great for Fresno State with the baseball team making a nice run. We'll see what happens starting tomorrow. Jackson, appreciate it. Have a great weekend, a very meaningful Memorial Day. I'll talk to you next week, and I hope a lot of people jump aboard that flash sale tomorrow, because that's a tremendous deal for everybody. Total cost is what for the year then, Jackson? Because you're mentioning what, just a couple bucks a month really now, right now?
Yeah, it's somewhere $22, $23 for the year, so that's less than $2 a month, and that covers you through the 2019 season for football and basketball, recruiting, I mean, all the good stuff. And you'll get our content over the next couple of months as we keep Bulldog fans interested until August.
Well, it's well worth it, that's for sure. Again, barkboard.com. Jackson, appreciate it, my friend. Talk to you next week. Take care.
You too, Tony. Thank you.
All right, guys, Jackson Moore. We'll take a break, come back with CG, a little transition work from email land, and then we'll take you to 6 o'clock tonight. The Giants pre, 6:05, 6:45, first pitch. The A's have already won today. They're back at 500. The Giants still a few games back of that, but they and the Braves played the third of four today, and then tomorrow afternoon they'll have our slot as they wrap up that four-game set at Oracle. Take a break on 5000 Watt 940 ESPN. Welcome back, 2:32, Bulldog Hour to 3, CG will bring it with CGP to 6 o'clock, and then Los Gigantes, 6:05, the pre, 6:45, first pitch to Braves, third of four. Tomorrow afternoon they will have our time slot. Keep in mind, tomorrow you've got Giants and Braves baseball in the afternoon, and then right after that, CG will come up in that period of time, and that will lead you to the Bulldogs' first game in the Mountain West Tournament, which is scheduled for 6:30, another 4.5 hours between games, the UNLV-San Diego State 2-3 game, with the Aztecs being the home team as the 2-seed, the designated home team at Pacoli Park in Reno. That starts at 2, so you have got 4.5 hours until the Bulldogs start at 6:30. Some of these games can take a long time, but we also have weather problems that are very much in the forefront in Reno. We'll see if it's just cold and windy or cold, windy, and wet. But if everything goes according to form, Paul will be up with Pre tomorrow at 6 and the first pitch at 6:30. If the Bulldogs win, same time on Friday. If they lose, they play an elimination game earlier at 2 o'clock on Friday. And then if you can get to 2-0 to the weekend, you're in the catbird seat and somebody will have to beat you twice. And all you need to do is win that Saturday game or one of those on Sunday if necessary, and you'll be okay. We'll see how it plays out. All right, guys, chance right now to bring the aforementioned Christopher Gabriel up. A little transition work from email then. CG, how you doing?
Doing very well. I'm just watching here and waiting to see if the Blues score another goal.
Okay. You know, the storied history of the rivalry of the Blues and the Bruins. Back, you and I were talking about Bobby Orr, and he may be the only guy who cares beyond the people in Boston and in St. Louis about this rematch from 1970. We don't care out here, do we, CG? Seriously.
No, we really don't. And I have we almost had Greg Wyshynski join us today, of course, the lead NHL writer for ESPN, but his flight plans changed, and so we weren't able to get him today. But somebody, another friend of mine, a media friend in St. Louis, said, well, I guess CG, that we haven't known each other all that long, but he said, I guess that means you're going to be rooting for the Blues, right? I said, let me just explain something to you, Ben. As I said to him, I said, you may have forgotten that I'm from Chicago. I am a Blackhawks fan. I can't stand the Blues. I don't like them, their fans, their uniforms. I don't like anything about them. And I have adopted the Sharks since coming out here. I got home last night. My daughter was right in front of the TV in her jersey, and she looks at me. She goes, it's not good, Daddy. And I said to him, no, I'm rooting for the black and gold. I'm rooting for the Hub. I'm rooting for the Bees. I hope they sweep you. It's that simple.
Well, I'll tell you this. For the Sharks, their performances in games 5 and 6 were not awe-inspiring.
No, not at all.
That's all I can say. If you're gonna lose, you're going to lose without any doubt, and that's exactly what they did. So,
And I'll just say this in all seriousness, the credit to the Blues. They were dead last in the NHL back at the beginning of January, and they just turned it around. It's been a miraculous story. That deserves its due. That this is a team that all four lines are playing well. They're getting good goaltending. They're not playing dumb hockey. They're not beating themselves. They're not making mistakes. But I think they're going to meet their match with the Bruins. I don't know who's going to win. I'm leaning to the Bruins. I think the Bruins have just a little more offense, a little more defense, and they are just as physical. The Sharks were not quite as physical. I don't think that's why they lost, but the Bruins are as physical, and I do like the Bruins in this. I like the Bruins to win this series. I think it might go 6 or 7 in terms of length. It's not gonna be a short series, not like the sweeps that we've seen in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, I think you're right. I personally, right now, I would rather see Yari Curry and Wayne Gretzky playing pickup hockey against Mike Bossy and Billy Smith, but that's just me and you. And that, you know what? Those are references you folks don't need to look up. Trust me. All right.
Hold on. Luke Robitaille on line 3.
Yes, sir. Ron Duguay's hair is somewhere out there. You know, they picked greatest. I've got to tell you, they picked greatest hair in the history of the NHL.
I saw that.
They left Ron Duguay off of
that. How do they do that?
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. You know what? The only person who could match his hair was Carol Alt, and that's who he was with.
Yeah,
so.
Well, there we go again. going up to the Blues. I just love that, the fact that the Blues, the boisterous folks in MSG saying, well, we can't wait for Carol Alt to come up here. And one night she came up there, and little scared boys showed up there. They did not say one word. They talked to them. They were all David Putty up there. Every one of them was talking a big game until she got up there.
It was very much the, go ahead, Vinny, go, you say something. I'm not going to say something.
Exactly.
You say something.
I'm not saying nothing. It's Carol Oates. You know?
Yeah.
And I said that about her. I didn't know if she was coming up here.
Yeah.
That's exactly it. All right. To email that, our good friend Chris, and I do have to explain this to CG. There was a conversation that ended up talking about Game Show Network. One thing, congratulations to Channel 30 for screwing up Jeopardy last night. Atta baby. I made a comment about Card Sharks, and our buddy Chris, Lato San Bruno in Seattle, actually emailed in and said, a Card Shark shout-out, higher, higher, lower, lower, freeze. Chris, it's sad that you remember that. At the end of the email, he had a shout-out. to former Card Sharks host Jim Perry. If you don't know what Card Sharks was.
Oh, I do.
It's a 70s game show. Yep. Look it up on Game Show Network. Anyway, he did mention, talking about Fresno State, that after initially thinking they had no shot, the baseball team in that large, after taking a look down, Paul has been very optimistic about this. Chris made a comment. He said, you know what, it looks better than he thought, but may still be sweating it out if they don't win the conference tourney because of bubble teams like Florida, Arizona, and Virginia getting a long look because of their league affiliations. Is that the way you're looking at it, CG, that the Bulldogs should get in regardless? Trembley said it shouldn't matter even if they don't win a game in Reno, they should get in. But do you worry about the big-time conferences stealing bids from a Fresno State if they don't win the conference tourney and get the auto bid?
This might be a benchmark moment for you and I, but I'm agreeing with Trembley on this.
Sure to email him.
Yeah, as I call him the captain, I tweet about, you know, when he gets on there, he's like,
you gotta put your tray tables and back upright in the season.
You know, that's
people
what he sounds like.
You know what? Chasing my regulars off now. Unbelievable.
Hey, you know what? Jeez. He listens. I love Steven.
He's a great guy.
I think that if the NCAA selection committee wanted to make some sort of weak line in the sand with Fresno State softball, and say the line the line that we're drawing here is that your RPI was too low. If that's what they truly wanted to say, then they can't use that with Fresno State, because Fresno State's RPI as of this morning is 38. I believe there are 64 teams that get into the baseball tournament, the NCAA baseball tournament, and yep, there are major conferences that certainly have better teams overall than the Mountain West, but Fresno State has had a tremendous season. Nobody is going to question their 35-14 record. I don't think it shouldn't matter what they do in this tournament, because I think that their resume is more than enough. You know, they went out and they beat Tennessee in Tennessee. At the time, Tennessee was 15-0. Tennessee is a top 25 team. Yeah, they beat them 1-3, not 2-3 or all three, but they beat them at Lindsey Nelson Stadium. They played a great game against Stanford. They lose 2-0. They play four games against Oregon out of the Pac-12. They win two of them. They could have won three, should have won three, and maybe could have won four. But the point here is that it shouldn't matter if they do lose, you know, if they do get eliminated in this tournament early, that's just, they still should be in. But if for people who are concerned or a little worried that the selection committee is going to, you know, basically thumb their nose at the Mountain West, and we've certainly seen that before too many times, then I think to absolutely ensure that they're going to get in, they need to win their first game.
I would agree that if they can get themselves at all toward the title round they're in, no matter what, I think they're going to win the tournament anyhow the way they're playing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think they'll be okay, and then they'll probably end up with the number one team in the nation's regional. But that's the geography that we talk about. And the good news would be if they were to go down to Westwood and win, maybe if things played out right, they could end up with super regional at home, which would be terrific to see. But you know what? There's a long way between now and then, and I know that Mike Batesole is looking just at that game against Nevada on Thursday.
And I would say this, and Tony, you may disagree, and if so, I'd like to hear your thought on this. I think more than football and more than basketball, when you look at who's the number one, two, three team in the nation and what have you, one of the great equalizers in college baseball is if you get some great pitching, you can shut that other team down. And that has not been a problem for this Fresno State team. They have been getting some great pitching. I would not put it past this team to be able to go to a regional. I don't think they're going to get out of a super regional, but I wouldn't put it past this team that they could get to a regional and win a regional.
Well, you may very well be right, and you talk about the great pitching being the mitigator. Well, Paul and I have talked a great deal about 2011, where Fresno State went down to UCLA, and everybody talked Bulldogs, who had that outstanding Bulldog team, and the Bruins and UC Irvine, even though there were major league arms throwing. The Anteaters were the ones that shocked everybody, so you just never know, and that's the thing about baseball, and hopefully the Bulldogs will get off to the proper start, and again, win the first two if you get big performances, which you should, from Jensen and Moore on Thursday and Friday, you have a great shot. But
we'll
see what happens.
And Tony, forgive my interruption. And I'll give you one more quick parallel, and I'll go to softball. For what it's worth, Michigan ranked 19th in the country. They're playing at home, and they're in the double elimination regional, and they're playing James Madison. And James Madison already has a loss. On the final Sunday, little James Madison would have to beat mighty Michigan at their stadium in Ann Arbor twice to go on, and they did. And it was just shocking that they did, and they pounded them. So you just never know what's going to happen. I think baseball, there's just a lot more variety. There's a lot more variables in play that can work for a team. Of course, you know, that's a door that swings both ways. Fresno State could get up and get into a game against UCLA. The bats aren't, nothing's happening. Their pitching falls apart, and then boom, just like that, one loss, two losses, and they're done. So who knows?
Well, I just look forward to the journey, which will start tomorrow with 6 o'clock pre, 6:30 first pitch, Bulldogs in Nevada on Nevada's home field. That's just how it works. And by the way, speaking of home field, since you brought up Lindsey Nelson Stadium, I always thought, you know, we talk about the checkerboards at Tennessee, and we even have them here at Fresno State in the sprint turf. I thought when they went to the sprint turf in Knoxville, what they should have done is had a garish-looking turf to look just like one of Lindsey Nelson's jackets. I thought that would have been perfect. Terrible plaid and everything. Wouldn't that have been a great, great field to have? You would know from up above what stadium you're talking about, even if people didn't tell you.
The first
where the
time
aerial shot was.
You talk about garish jackets. When I was recruited by Ray Mears for basketball, the first time
get a dentist, Ray.
Oh my goodness, there were a lot of stories we could tell, and Jack Furtick's got so many because he was on Tennessee staff after Coach Mears. But when I met him, he was in the bright Tennessee orange, the creamsicle orange sport coat, and it didn't bother me, but I think Lindsey Nelson's jackets and Ray Mears' jackets, they really could have competed on a model runway for who had the most garish jackets.
Those two guys as models is just a frightening thought no matter what. Again, Google it, friends. All right, I want to get to Boise Bob's email, and I'm sure that Boise Bob is not our good friend Bob Beeler, who is the play-by-play voice Boise State and who lives and dies with the orange and blue. I do mean this, that Bob goes into terminal depression when things don't go well for his beloved Broncos. And
he gets testy, too. He gets very testy.
That's why I'm saying he would not send an email, Boise Bob. If it were Bob Beeler, the email would say Bob Beeler on it.
That's okay? Right. Oh, absolutely,
He's not hiding behind anybody. But Boise Bob said, I hate to break the news to you Bulldog diehards, but there is no way that John Gruden wants to hitch his wagon long-term to Derek Carr. Also, we need to play you guys every single regular season, which means two meetings each football season, implying the two teams will always meet for the Mountain West title. First things first, we have talked about this with Gruden. I cannot. You think it's tough to predict what in the world Kevin Durant's going to do. The enigmatic nature of Kevin Durant may be succeeded in the Bay Area only by John Gruden right now. CG, I don't think, no matter what Derek says publicly, and I understand why Derek's taking the stance he's taking, saying, look, I'm here and I'm going to be here for a long time, right? I don't think anybody, including Derek, can be sure what in the world John Gruden has in mind. I don't know that John Gruden knows at this point.
Well, first of all, I hate to break it to Boise Bob, but he's not breaking anything to Bulldog Diehard. This is not breaking news. You and I have talked about this. I've talked about this since John Gruden got the job. I agree with Boise Bob that I don't believe, with all due respect to Derek Carr, that unless Carr leads this team this year to 14-2 or 15-1, and that's not happening, I don't think he's going to be the quarterback in Las Vegas either. I really don't. But you're right. John Gruden, his moods and his game plans seem to change as fast as Fargo, North Dakota weather. So I'm with you there. As far as playing every single regular season, that's cute that he said the two meetings, and I think he's overstating what he thinks Boise State's going to be this year. But I would love to see Fresno State and Boise State play every year. Even though I've been here a while, I understand there's a rotating, deal with the schedule, and the Utah State comes
two,
in.
Two on, two off, all the time in the crossovers.
Tell me this, because, I've not paid enough attention to it. Is there a rock solid every year you play one team from the other division?
Yeah, well, what happens is the way they've got the thing set for an eight-game conference season, you'll always play your five
right.
divisional foes every year, rotational, home and road. You'll always play three of the six in the crossover. So for the Bulldogs, when they see Boise State for 2 years, they will then not see
yeah.
them for 2 years. And it's the same rotation. In other words, until they change it, which they will a little bit, you know the three teams that you're playing on a given year, that 2 years from there you will not see those teams for a couple of seasons.
Okay.
And so it means that, and we've had the discussion, and CG, I will ask you about this. You know, is there a benefit, taking everything else aside, assuming that Boise State is going to be a quality football program every year, which is a fair assumption. They're not necessarily going to be a BCS buster or whatever, but they are going to be a high-level team every year. Would it help or would it cannibalize Fresno State and Boise State to be playing one another, even non-conference, in the 2 years where they don't play each other within conference?
Well,
would it help or would it actually hurt inadvertently the teams?
I this is what I don't like. I'm glad you confirmed that for me, because this is what I don't like about the Mountain West schedule. I think the Mountain West should do what the SEC does. You play the teams in your division, as Fresno State and Boise and everybody does. You have two crossover teams every couple of years. That makes sense. And you have one team from the other division that is considered a natural rivalry, whether it's a local rivalry or it's a rivalry that's been built over the years, much like Tennessee. They play Alabama every year. Florida, their natural rival in the other division every year is LSU. And I would love to see Fresno State and Boise State, that be the rivalry game beyond anything else that is played every year. I think it would be great for the conference. I think it would be great for the conference in terms of the national radar that you would have a marquee game every year, and it was played maybe the second to last game, so that the last game of the year was a division game, so that you didn't
right.
have a chance of Fresno State and Boise State having to play a second week in a row. I don't think it would cannibalize it. I think it would up the game for everybody, and I think there would be years that it would probably hurt, but I think there'd be more years that it would help. Imagine the interest every year, because neither fan base cares for the other, neither program, despite what they say publicly, really cares for the other. Oh, sure, there's respect and what have you, but all we need to do is listen to Cam Morrell talk about Boise State.
That's an interesting baseline.
Listen to Cam. He has come on this show and just savaged Boise State. And
well,
listen to our friend Bob Beeler. When Bob Beeler, when 2 years ago, when Paul was up there and he was during game day live, and you and I, we deferred to listen to their conversation, and Bob
yep.
was trying to make a case why Boise deserved that game up there, and Paul, thankfully, was throwing it right back at him. Bob, you could hear Bob getting ticked off, and it's like, Bob, you don't have a leg to stand on here. Absolutely none. So, to a long-winded answer, I would love to see them play Boise State every year. So that would probably mean at least every other year they would beat Boise State at least once, probably twice.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm another guy who would love to see it happen. I think, as you're mentioning, it's a built-in rivalry, and if the teams looked at it and said, just take this configuration we're in now and say it's going to stay long-term, right, where you're going to have
yeah.
three crossovers, so you're going to have 2 years home and road against those crossover teams, then 2 years where you don't see them. If they were to just, as you're mentioning, just build in the schedule and say, okay, look, we know the years that we are not scheduled in the regular season, conference-wise. Let's go ahead and play home and home those 2 years. Let's always make sure the home and home is set so that it rotates, where if you played the conference game to finish at home, it means the non-conference battle the next year will be on the road, etc. Right? So you don't play
right.
back-to-back there. Leaves you still open, obviously, to play your conference title game. I think it would be terrific, but yet talking to people around both programs, they have said, we don't know that we might not inadvertently, rather than helping our conference, knock one another down with that game. And I think that looks past what the fans really want,
which
is what you're saying.
Absolutely.
They want to see the orange and blue playing Fresno State as much as possible.
Look, I mean, look, I'm going to use the SEC again as an example because...
Got about 30 seconds, CG.
Sure.
Just want to let you know.
Absolutely. Thank you. Look at the SEC. You look at how great those programs are, but you've got the Alabama-Tennessee game every year. You've got the Florida-LSU game every year. You've got the Georgia-Auburn game every year. Those, if people want to complain about that conference, fine, but nobody's avoiding anybody. Nobody is avoiding anybody in that conference, and you're getting great matchups, great rivalries. It's great for the fans, and I think it would be great for Fresno State and Boise State as well, Tony. I'm going to talk about it at 3:05.
And I'm in total agreement, and I think what it does is when you talk about the difficulty in scheduling quality opponents, right, knowing that every other year you've got a quality Boise State team in here would be huge, I think, to really up your credibility.
Yes.
But I'm not the one who's making the final decision. Thank goodness for everybody that's not the case. All right. My wife has said I shouldn't make any decisions about anything.
I don't want to say anything.
And I agreed with her. And 36 years later, I'm still not making decisions. That's why it's working out.
That works.
All right. With that disclaimer out of the way, CG, have a great one, my friend.
Thank you.
I will talk to you on Friday, hopefully. Bulldogs need to cooperate Thursday. As long as they do, you and I will have a full hour on Friday. Take care.
Thank you, Tony. I'll
see you. All right, guys, we'll take a break. Get you set up for CG after this on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN.